Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Setting the Record Straight. This is your program host, Brenda K. Sanders. Glad you could join me again today for the broadcast. And, you know, there's always something to talk about on this program. I just read where Straight Outta Compton has now yielded, I think, $135 million. At the box office, and I guess that's in the 2-week turnaround, and really 3 weekends. You know, I started to reflect on what kind of economic power that we have in the Black community. Now, I'm not saying just Black people went to see the movie, but certainly it leads one to consider the breadth and depth of the power that we have economically. And we should be able to coalesce together. That's one thing, you know, I'm just going to say this on this program. The Black community needs to stick together. Because if you do, there are things that can be done. I mean, there are great things that can be done. First of all, I see a movie like that. I haven't seen the movie, okay? That's not my speed. You can say I'm old-fashioned, you know, that's just not me, and I know where I stand, not having seen the movie, so I'm not criticizing the movie. What I criticize here on Setting the Record Straight is this: if we can get together and accumulate those kinds of numbers economically for a rap group, or you know, a biopic, if you will, for a rap group, why can't we coalesce to fight racism and to fight police brutality and to fight some of these other injustices that we see and hear about every day? I think that's one of the big things that we don't recognize, the power that we have. And if we just come together, We can get some things done with that kind of money floating around, if you know what I mean. We are definitely a powerful group to be reckoned with. And even that can come into play with voting blocks and so forth. If we just make an effort, a serious concentrated effort, a continual effort to come together and stand as a powerful united force. You know, Black Lives Matter. Somebody started it. I don't know who. I think it started after the Ferguson incident. Black lives do matter. And, you know, it's sort of like we have started saying it. Well, let's just undergird that with movement, positive movement. I see today where there was I looked at the arraignment of the shooter of the Texas sheriff there in Harris County, Texas. I saw a story, I think Roland Martin on his program and maybe even on the Tom Joyner Morning Show, they talked about this Black young man who shot this sheriff. Now, if you review the facts of the case, it appears as though they happened stance upon the premises of the gasoline station, both at the same time. I mean, that's unclear. I didn't focus on that part. But whatever happened after that transpired, the gunman, the Black guy, I understand, the Afro-American man, shot the sheriff as he was first of all, uniformed in his sheriff's clothes, and he was getting gas. And this person, I forgot the defendant's name, happened upon the scene. Who knows? He may have trailed them. I don't know. And shot him in the back of the head. I believe they said 15 times. Now, I took the time to look at and hear the words of the prosecutor as she read. She was reading the police report in support of the charging document to charge this man with first-degree murder. And she meticulously cited the facts of the case. And having a listening ear and looking for certain information, I did not see or hear any information that suggested this was a case that was connected with the Black Lives Movement. I mean, the Black Lives Movement has been moving since all the time. It's never stopped, if you ask me. It just has a name now. Someone has just put a label on it. But there are some media outlets trying to Lives Matter issue or action. And it is totally untrue. Totally untrue. And there we have that type of mainstream media propaganda rearing its ugly head again without any support, without any basis whatsoever. What I heard when the defendant was arraigned was that he went on, the premises of this gas station, shot the sheriff, and then left. He was identified through the camera security there as having a white and red truck with that thing that you put on the back. I think it was kind of like a hitch. I forgot there was something else that distinguished the truck, or at least made it identifiable. And I believe someone was astute enough to get the plate, or they may have acquired that because of the camera view. But in any event, they traced this truck to a home where the officials went up, police officials or otherwise, went up to the home and inquired with the residents there. And they said, well, I believe it was the owner of the truck who said, look, I loaned my truck out. Other people drive my truck beside me. I didn't do it. And somebody else, my brother, may have driven the truck. And then that leads them to the garage, and a search warrant was obtained, and they find apparently a gun that was used in this killing. This is a very strong circumstantial case, even though it's not a direct evidence case. Now, I understand they have a witness. I don't know to what extent the witness observed the incident. But this is definitely a circumstantial case, having to make certain inferences from the physical evidence, which you also have. That being a gun in the garage, that have to connect that gun with the shooting at the scene of the sheriff. And, I mean, you'd have to, you know, put the gun and identify that with this person that they're charging. But this is a murder case. It's a murder case. Now, what is unclear is the motive behind it. And in murder cases, you really don't have to prove motive, even though it's helpful to understand why someone took the action. We don't know that yet. And I understand from the arraignment that the defendant has had several numerous contacts with the police. I believe one resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, and a few charges, even though most of them were minor, I believe, minor. I believe there's one charge there that was a little more serious than the others, but most of those were minor offenses, and one serious offense, but not that serious, maybe a gun offense of some type. But now we have allegedly, and I'm always careful to say allegedly someone who has committed a murder, apparently graduating from minor offenses to a full-blown capital offense. If that's true, if that's him, he has appropriately, I believe, in his own defense, remained silent. But the reason why I say that the Black Lives Movement is infused into this case as a hate crime and this is their agenda and so forth, I believe that's totally incorrect. First of all, to prove that something is a hate crime, you have to go much further than just somebody killed somebody. One party is Black, one party is white. Title 18 is the federal law that governs hate crime actions. And it is so narrow that, my goodness, it's very hard to meet that burden in such a narrow form. And it says if someone is perceived as discriminating or committing an act because someone is of a certain gender, someone is of a certain race, someone is of a certain religious affiliation and so on, then you might attach a hate emotion to it. Now, in this instance, I don't think it's totally clear, and no one can make those assumptions right now. First of all, the defendant was quite acquainted with the law enforcement officials there in Harris County. I've practiced in Harris County as well, and I know that the sheriff's department there dominates a lot of the enforcement and patrols there as well, and as well in the court. But he could have been offended and disgruntled about how he was mistreated by this officer. It could have been any number of things besides just a hate crime. Maybe happened upon the scene and noticed the officer and remembered the officer or recognized him from some of his arrests or some of his dealings with the sheriff's department. And so we cannot assume that it's a hate crime or that Black Lives Matter is a hate group. It's funny when you raise the banner to promote the rights of a certain group that it's determined to be a hate group. And not necessarily, especially if you're promoting a civil right and those rights that should be observed by other members and races of the community. That's our right. It's a right of that defendant to stand mute before that judge, as he did. He's not concealing anything. That's the right he has under the U.S. Constitution. And then he will be proven or disproven, or unless he's proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, then he will be exonerated. But those, all of those things have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And I assume that the Harris County Prosecutor's Office is going to put a case together that will come before the court to be litigated and adjudicated. The other thing I want to say is the hate crime statute, Title 18, is a federal law. He is charged in the state court there in Texas. So he is charged under state law. And a lot of times what happens is if there are circumstances that would warrant the charging of a person or group under the federal law team, hate crime statute, those state charges can be appended or go up to the federal court where he can face charges as or where it will be colorized as a hate crime. And so at this moment, I don't think that the Harris County prosecutors have any evidence whatsoever that there is that was a hate crime. Otherwise, I believe the federal authorities would be notified and possibly issue charges against this young man. So all of that is just untrue, that, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is a hate group and that they are attempting to now encourage these shootings across the country. That is not true. I think it, what it is that it's more frequently occurring that we have a black shooter of white victims, and they're trying to attach this to the agenda of the Black Lives Movement. I think it's legitimate. I think it's just, like I said, in fact, I know it's propaganda and it's unsupported even by the Harris County Prosecutor's Office. So I don't think they're going to make a case of that anytime soon. Well, okay, that is the end of the program for today. I am hoping that you will go and listen to an archive broadcast of this episode or any other episode of Setting the Record Straight. Certainly they're available to you for your listening activities or whatever when you get ready. If you have a comment, a criticism, a recommendation, you can always email me at bks1233@outlook.com. And any other information that you wish to forward to me. I received an invitation today from a group. Please feel free to use that email, okay? Use that email if you want to communicate with me further. All right, well, thank you for listening to the program again. You have a blessed Monday evening, and I'll talk to you next time.